Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. I am your host, Christopher Gallagher. It's the 29th of September 2022 as Celtic are back at the weekend and we're here to talk about that and some other things. There's no Christopher Sormani this week. We had him on the agenda on Monday and we thought we'd give him the night off. So we have the returning Alan Edgar, who was on holiday, lovely time. Alan, how are you? You good, my friend?
I'm good, delighted to be back. Coincided with Celtic coming back on Saturday as well, so all good.
Perfect. We also have the wonderful Barry Gallagher. Barry, hello friend, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Good to be back on the flagship pod, and it's nice to see some friendly faces.
Absolutely. Obviously, Celtic have been on hiatus due to the international break, but they're back this weekend. We take on Motherwell. So we'll have a look at Motherwell and what we're expecting from that. Yeah, we've got some injuries and stuff. We can talk through that as well. But there is some news. We're going to start talking about the TV deal. We're not going to go on too much into that. There's a Biscuit Tin podcast that you can listen to on thecynic.co where we'll go into more detail on that. There's been pods every day on thecynic.co. Myself and Barry took part in a podcast called The Rumour Mill, which was looking at the summer of 1995, 1996, looking at some of the names we were linked with, some of the players we signed, an overview of the squad. Barry, did you enjoy that podcast?
I did. It's the most fun I've had in a while, actually. Not just on pods in general.
Just in life.
But no, that's, as we said on the pod, that was kind of the perfect pod for you and I. And it's funny, like you just slide back into being in that time frame and some of the names, I know there's been a lot on Twitter about it, even a couple of names that we maybe missed, but all the big hitters were there. And Ginola being the big one. So I've been actually thinking a lot about him, of how things would have been if we had signed him, because what a player.
Yeah, sliding doors stuff. We'll do more of those podcasts because they're a lot of fun to do and put a lot of time and research into it. Let's start off before we get to the main news. The big news of Scottish football, I guess, would be the SPFL TV deal. So there's a deal's been signed off on by the league. Alan, just your brief thoughts on a new TV. It's not something necessarily we take a lot of pleasure kind of talking about because it's a bit more complicated. What's your thoughts on it?
I think what it smacks of is that the league wants a guaranteed income pot.
Yeah.
For it largely is for maybe a core of 7 or 8 clubs so that they know that they have a guaranteed income or as close to a guaranteed income as you can get. I think the ghost of Setanta kind of
looms large.
Yeah. And I think that's maybe what is in the league's thinking. There's a lot of chat about, you know, new broadcasters trying to find new avenues. And, you know, everyone's all for that. I don't think you'll get anyone that says they don't want us to go and explore a partnership with, you know, Amazon, Apple TV, all these ones as well. But in reality, I don't know how interested they would be in the short term. And I think the league are very concerned about it, very worried about it, especially new broadcasters. So I think it is a bit unimaginative. I think it's very limiting. And I think from given what we've had over the last 18 months, I think there's maybe what it feels as if we're going back the way potentially, and that we might actually, people who don't attend football matches, can't afford to, whatever, they probably feel like they're getting shut out a little bit again. And that's maybe disappointing because it felt like after COVID, we had taken a step forward with streaming and things like that. Yeah. Actually, feels like it's taken a step back and it's pushed that potential, any progress forward. You know, you're talking 2029 and I mean, that sounds like a long time away. So I think it is maybe a wee bit unimaginative. I think a lot of the clubs will be happy that they can say we've got what is a guaranteed pot of money that is a figure that we can work with over the next, you know, 7 years or 8 years, whatever it is. So they'll be happy with it. But I think I don't think there's going to be much progress in terms of how we market the league in that time.
Barry, your thoughts?
Much the same. And I think, as Alan says, it's a guaranteed income. But I think it's decisions like this, or what looks like it's going to be a decision that way, is why the league gets left behind so much. All of these big broadcasters were always going to play second fiddle to our neighbours in England because they play so much into that. There's so many games where they don't even send cameras up here if they aren't covering it live, even though they've got the rights for the whole league. And it is a kind of rock and a hard place you can understand, especially with the way the world is just now financially, why they want this sort of guaranteed income. But you just think there's so many avenues out there that if you took a risk, it could be so much better. I think like the Dutch TV deal and stuff like that, they were getting messed around, and the clubs kind of set up their own. And I know there's been the whole SPFL TV debate for years, but I would like us to look into something like that. But again, it takes away that guarantee.
I think even just very kind of lastly on it from me is that what the clubs probably, and you do need to think of the clubs as a collective. We don't think about that. I mean, personally, I think we all just think about Celtic and what's best for Celtic. If the clubs even want to get a better deal out of the current broadcaster Sky in the long term, they need to actually come together a wee bit and decide what do we want out of it and how far are we willing to negotiate with Sky, because it does feel like it is just basically a top up.
Yeah,
this isn't a case of we've sat down and looked at it and says, well, you got this deal, but the next deal might be entirely different. It kind of feels like we'll just tag more years onto it and we'll give you, you know, a payment you might be happy with, but the terms will be much the same. The clubs disagreeing a lot in the background probably doesn't help to, you know, put a united front out, because if they can't come to something and agree what the terms are, then they know that when they go into that negotiation with Sky get a really strong hand. So it feels like it doesn't impact me particularly much. I don't think it'll impact us too much, because I think we've got avenue streams that are not open to, or revenue streams, sorry, that are not open to really any other club in the league. So I think we'll be fine. But if you do want to see the league improve and grow, and you do see some of the content that other leagues put out, it markets them better, then there's things that you can do. And it just feels like, well, this is another in a long line of things that it kind of feels like we just try and copy England, and it really doesn't work for us. It really doesn't work.
We've got so many unique selling points as well. Yeah. Like, I know it's become a bit of a cliche, like the cinch and all that, but there is so many good things happening in Scottish football. And it is just trying to channel that to show the world what we can be without being England's poorer younger brother kind of thing.
There's no sort of kind of expressive thinking. It's all very sort of, as you say, Alan, guaranteed money so that everything's safe for the next 5 or 10 years. When in reality, you know, I look at, you know, you're a fan of American sports, right? See the confidence that these teams and these managers have in their league and in their product. There's just a lack of confidence in our product. Your man, what do you call him? The chief executive, Neil Doncaster, basically talks about Scottish football in a way that's, well, we should be happy we've got this. This is a quote. Today's announcement represents a major financial boost to our 42 member clubs at a time when the UK economy is facing significant headwinds and will increase the exposure of Europe's most exciting and passionate league. So he's just called us Europe's most exciting and passionate league. We've much more, you know, there are some positives to it. In regard to this, you know, we do the Celtic Women's Football Show. Lorenzo and Claire are fantastic on it. They do it every week. There's now going to be Scottish Women's Premier League games broadcast on Sky. It's a small positive, of course. There is the option for streaming, but the streaming is all very much sort of around timing. And the idea that it's like Sky, they've got 60 games, but that, was it 60 games? Sky's are permitted to show up to 60 games a season. It could go up to 80. It'll probably something like 40.
Yeah, that's criminal that there's so many games that they don't take up. Yeah. And we've felt that, the Celtic fans, when I know previously you would have to buy it from the opposition team's own TV channel, but we weren't allowed to do that this year. So I think this season, the Ross County game, there was no means of watching it.
I think what clubs really should be aware of is that this deal leaves, in my opinion, and it is just at a glance, and you know, as you say, the biscuit tin guys and other people will give it a proper breakdown, but it leaves money on the table.
Yeah.
And that's what I think, you know, when he uses business speak, like, you know, financial headwinds and things like that, you really then should be trying to maximise what you can bring in. And I'm not sure the deal does, but a lot of the clubs will be happy with it because they can, you know, create a 5-year plan based on that income. So, you know, it provides some stability, but I think as fans, maybe for people who sit and maybe watch football in the house, don't know how exciting a deal it is. If you aren't a season ticket holder,
nothing changes.
Don't travel and watch football, then yeah, you've not the potential for the league to grow and be a bit more expressive, as you say, over the next, you know, five to seven years is really not there.
Also, so just finally before we move on though, like, it's this whole idea of, okay, that, you know, Sky have signed a deal for 60 matches. they've got access to 80. Should there not be a clause in the contract that says if they don't hit 60, they owe us money because they've not explored? Do you know what I mean? Like, just simple things that just they don't. As I say, to me, it's about a bunch of people who don't actually rate the product trying to sell the product way below its valuation. And that is just bad news written all over it. But what are you going to do?
It also did annoy Rangers, though.
What I would say
everything
is...
Everything I just said about the clubs coming together.
Yeah.
It's nice to see
them. It's nice to see. They were left out in the cold, Barry. Terrific.
Love it. Yep, same bestie lover. Everything we said, put it in the bin.
Yeah, everything we've just said absolutely go the opposite way.
Love that Doncaster fella.
Yeah, terrific. Talking about out-of-date football clubs and out-of-date things, Kyle Lafferty has been... going to get banned for 10 days for sectarian stuff. No surprise.
Sectarian stuff.
Aye. Being an arsehole in that, innit? 10 games. Why do people employ Kyle Lafferty?
I don't know. He doesn't offer it on the pitch anymore either. He's not particularly good. And I just think, see the way that, I think we've all seen the clip.
Yeah.
The way he said it, like, you don't even have to think of it. So you know that that's something he uses on a regular basis, that type of language. So he'll mend him.
Yeah.
Is this a part where we act like we're surprised?
And horrified.
And pretend that that's not such a huge part of everybody's grown up, everybody's kind of life experiences.
I just can't. No, none of that. No, I'm not.
I'm genuinely surprised that it even led to a 10-game ban.
Yeah, me too.
Or potential 10-game ban, because I don't think it's confirmed.
It's not confirmed yet. I just mean, why would you be so stupid to expose yourself like that? Do you know what I mean? Like, just...
Not generally a big fan of the pictures with other teams' players and shouting... something.
Yeah. Try to get it out of
But nevertheless, you know, that's not really the point, to be honest.
Scott Brown has dealt with it. He just walks away, doesn't he? So there's a way of just dealing with these folk. But obviously, a big Kyle is his sectarianism shines through.
It shines through. Absolutely.
He'll be missed. We watched him in that last game and obviously we played them. So I don't think any Kilmarnock fans will be too upset, to be honest.
You know how, like, you see a player in like their last stint in like the league. They did something. It's like Lyndon Dykes coming back up here now, and everyone be like, "Oh, well, we know how to play against you. You're actually not that good." Do you know what I mean? Like figuring someone out and just all their kind of all their ideas of what they think makes them unique actually is just so fucking rudderless and pointless. Yeah. It's delicious to see.
Quite harsh on Lyndon Dykes, I think. Putting him in the same boat as Kyle Lafferty.
I just mean like someone who caused his problems. Who, if he came up now, wouldn't he cause his fucking problems?
Hope he goes to the French league. He'll have at least two games a year where he is magnifique.
Yeah,
is that how you say it in French? Magnifique.
He's not even in our league, Lyndon Dykes.
Very good. Well done.
Your reaction to that was like, I'm waiting for you to say that. I was like, some other news.
Flying through the news here.
Aye, but what?
I just want to get to the good
because it's all shite news.
it's not the greatest news, is it? Matt O'Reilly. I'm not even going to. It doesn't matter who he's been linked with another Premier League club. It's probably again a lot of nonsense. Although to be fair, the scouts are there. But why would you not scout Denmark under 21s overall? Matt O'Reilly. I mean, he's just a talented guy. Do you think he started the season as well as he could?
I think he started it. I think he has started it really well. And I think his age and given the amount of football he's played, I think the progression that we've seen in him in the space of what. That'll be 9 months, not 8 months of, you know, of being here, including the break. I think the progression is really exciting. And I think it's that step up that he's handled so well, made himself largely a guaranteed starter in the team. I think it's that will attract attention because he has continually shown where he's went and played football that he has always succeeded. And he's done it down south. He's doing it here now. And I think it's like we talk about when we want to sign players that you need to get in, not quite on the ground, but you need to get pretty close. And I think teams will look at it and think, well, Celtic have shown over the years that they can play a little bit of hardball when it comes to a young talent who's tied down in a contract, and that's the position he's in. So teams will know that they can't really, if he has a breakout performance in the Champions League, then it becomes difficult and certain clubs are taking out that conversation, not just financially, but in terms of the options. So it doesn't surprise me teams were watching him. I've been really excited by him. But we're in a really good position, so it's not one that alarms me for January. And that's to me, that's all that really matters, because I think we're going to be having conversations about a lot of these players at the end of the season. As long as we're not having these conversations in the January window, you know, what happens at the end of the season, we can cross that bridge then.
The reason we're having these conversations and the reason these kind of links come up, Barry, is because these players are playing really fucking well. Obviously, St Mirren was a blip, and we've covered that, but like throughout this season and how we've performed in the Champions League, links, they're not welcome, of course, but it shows that these players are actually playing to their optimum.
Definitely, and I think it's the style of football that we're playing as well. Obviously, we've spoken a lot about Ange Ball and the type of football, and the fact that he has carried some good performances into the Champions League as well, as Alan said. It's kind of our own success is kind of leading to this. But if they continue to progress, and I think as well, he seems like he's got his head screwed on.
Yes, yes.
He's got his career kind of mapped out, and I like when players do that. But yeah, I wouldn't worry about January, but as Alan says, I think the summer we could lose a fair number of our players. But I think we are much better paced or suited for that now with the planning that seems to be going on behind the scenes. Not perfect, but it seems that we've got to act far better than it was previously.
And I think just on O'Reilly, the other thing that I think teams will be aware of as well is that he's starting to improve on the physical side of the game.
Yeah.
And for you look at him, he looks quite a lean guy. Obviously, he's quite tall, but actually his strength looks to have been something he's built on. And I think that's the difference I've noticed between last year and this year. I think that his minimum, and I'll try and think of that, players in the middle of the park, that minimum level, what is your minimum level of performance? I think he's brought it up. I think last year when he came in, we all knew that he had talent with the ball and that he was try things. But sometimes when he wasn't on the ball, sometimes he needed the game to slow down a little bit. This year I've noticed it a little bit more, that he's much more comfortable with the pace of the game and the power of the game. When players have pace, power, and technique,
yeah,
that's when they probably start looking beyond our kind of shows. But as long as he's here this year, generally there's so many players on our team that we could say the same thing about. All we need to think about is just year on year. Don't think about, I hope he stays for 3 years,
because yeah,
we've did that before. It's really difficult. It will be hard if we lose players, but we need to try and just look at it and say, build, and as Barry says, and move on. Take that money, invest it, move on. And that's what I would kind of hope that we do this time round.
I think that's a good point, because he maybe hasn't, so on the face of it, he hasn't had like the big moments of the goals like he had last year, but as you say, he's raised his base performance and you can see the impact on it. I keep, as soon as you mentioned his name, Gal, I think back to Tannadice and that first time ball over for Abada for Kyogo's goal, and just such a clever player. And I'm hoping that he can have that moment, because you know that he has a goal threat. And I hope it comes really soon. But his all-round game has improved, and I think you can see the respect that the rest of the team have for him as well. He seems a popular player, and he's happy to take the ball and he's happy to give him it. So, no, a brilliant player for us so far.
He's so level as well.
He never gets to...
For a 21-year-old, it's quite... I think it makes me feel old.
Yeah, you're off.
Looking at a player at that age and I've got that maturity. I know we've got a lot of young players, but... You kind of sometimes see those glimpses. Matt Riley, it's always the same. He's always level, and it is that. It's almost that ruthlessness of, I want to get to the best place I can be. He might not be a top player, but he wants to play at the very top level he possibly can, and that's a real attribute, especially in young players.
See, just on that, I think back to the pre-Real Madrid press conference that he was in, and he was saying that, well, we were talking about it at lunch about beating Real Madrid, and he was just so level with that, and I think that just added an extra excitement to going into that game, because he does speak so well, but he doesn't get too excited or doesn't get too down, and that really helps drive him on to be a top player.
I watched that, this is going to sound completely out of nowhere, but I watched a documentary about it's a really famous documentary about two guys climbing a mountain, and they both kind of get trapped. One of them falls through like a glacier and falls to the bottom of this mountain, and the other one is kind of hanging halfway through, and he's halfway up and he's halfway down, and
an Irish song.
It's halfway up. He makes a decision to cut the wire that's holding him to fall down, and that's the thing that saves his life, because he works back up. And I always think about Matt O'Reilly being offered that contract at Fulham and him just going, no, I'm going to go down a level, really, you know, make myself understand and learn the game a little bit more before being exposed to that high level. And, you know, I think that's just a level of his, as you say, his kind of character and what he does. And even just one more thing. See, when you watch those wee videos and it's like the teammate stuff, and it's like, I think the last one was really, really short, because it was like Abada and Giakoumakis. Usually they have someone who's got a bit of like, like Joe Hart or something, a bit funny and all that. Abada and Dickamas were just like answering the questions really quickly.
Taking it really seriously.
I love those, like genuinely.
Absolutely.
I want to know exactly whether Ben Segrist prefers pasta or rice. Like, I feel that my day cannot continue until I know the answer to that question.
And I want to know who the best dressed is in the room.
I just want to hear James McCarthy tell some jokes, because everybody says he's the funniest.
You know, absolutely. But what I thought was dead funny was the last one. Obviously, there's different types of ones. So there's the two of the teammates ones, and then there's this one they did recently with Matt O'Reilly, and it's just like questions, and they ask him two questions, and see every single question. I think Joe Hart did one, and he's like, oh, mate, I can't pick between, like, it was like, where do you prefer, Glasgow or Manchester, or wherever he's from? He's like, oh, mate, I don't know, how can I choose and all that? And dead funny, and what do you prefer, stereo or, like, iPod or whatever? And he's like, oh, dead funny. Matt O'Reilly, every question, he's just really thinking, like the thinker, like that statue, just thinking about everything. And I was just like, depth, depth.
Oh, boy.
Not just a pretty face.
Ange Postecoglou, in regards to what you were saying about how we need, we always talk about that conveyor belt, but it's not even necessarily about a conveyor belt. It's just about having potential players to bring in, and you know, scenario planning, I guess. There was a thing released, an interview last week with our good friend Darren O'Day, talking on Off the Ball, and he was talking about Ange Postecoglou. He was talking about the B team and how basically it's the reserves. There's this quote here. It's the reserve team. That's the easiest way to explain it. But the difference now that this year is there being a restructuring. It's directly under the manager. He takes a massive say in it. It's essentially trying to align our team into first team in terms of style of play, culture, profile of player, recruitment. Everything aligns into the first team. Hopefully this alignment gives us a better chance to get more players through. So that's a positive. He believes in what he does. Clearly, everyone in the club takes strength from that, and I am learning a lot from him. And it's essentially, this is all based around the idea that Ange Postecoglou is omnipresent throughout the entire club. What's your thoughts on that, Barry?
It's encouraging to hear. I'm not sure how much I believe it, because from what we've seen from Ange, it was the boy from St Mirren, Dylan Reid. And I remember how he kind of shot that transfer down, and I don't know. Maybe that was what led to it not happen. Mm-hmm. And Ange, to me, seems very... It goes back to that whole Martin O'Neill thing, where you want to control the whole club, but your main focus is those players that go out for you on a Saturday. So, while it is encouraging, it's kind of tinged with a wee bit of doubt for me. It all reads well, and as fans, it's good to hear about that continuity in the club, but I'm not sure how much I believe it myself.
Interesting. Alan, what's your thoughts? I mean, is it a case of, you know... And we're not going to have the debate about, you know, restructuring and all that. We've talked about it enough, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in the future. But is it a case of, you know, you don't want them doing too much?
I don't even think it's about you don't want them doing too much. I'm probably inclined to agree with Barry that, and it's not that I'm saying Darren Rees,
A liar.
How can I try and be polite about it? But if it's playing style, then that's fair enough, that's fine. But if it's anything deeper than that, then I just don't think it should be in the manager's remit.
Agreed.
I don't think that there is a crop of talent there at the moment that Ange Postecoglou will get the benefit of. And that's even being optimistic with how long he is here. You know, if he's here 4 years, is there the talent in there that he can rely on to compete at Champions League level, which he's made clear that he wants to compete at? I think the answer probably to that is no. So you then really wonder, is it something then that Ange Postecoglou feels that, obviously he's worked with youth teams before, so he's obviously experienced there, but is he looking at the structure, or is he saying, I want all the teams across all the levels to play the system that the first team play, so that if I need to call on any of them, I can? If it's that, that's fine. That's not really taking a big hand in it. That's fair enough. Again, though, it comes to the issue, if they overhaul everything and decide that we'll build it in the mould of Ange Postecoglou,
and then he leaves
in 2.5 years or 3 years even, do you rip it up then and build it in the mould of whoever's coming in? Now, these are all issues. I think there's a really, really big debate required about, I say debate, I think we talked about it on maybe here a couple of weeks ago. The setup that we have at youth level and then up to the B/reserve team needs someone external to come in and revamp it and say, here's what other clubs do. You can't just lift from somewhere else. We hear about the Ajax model. The dynamics are so different. Celtic need to win. They need to compete every single year. That's fine. But how do you retain players and make sure that boys that are 15, 16 years old who genuinely might go on and be players that are first team good enough, how do you hold them off until they're 18, 19 so that they don't get antsy and say, actually, there's a better pathway for me elsewhere? Because we have lost a generation of players who, some of them might not make it, but of the players that have left, some of them will have been good enough to play some role in the first team here. And that's what it's about. We've been quite lucky over the years that, you know, we've had Callum McGregor, Kieran Tierney, James Forrest, guys that have really contributed to the first team. But how do you make sure that that keeps coming through? Because we are going to have a gap of about 4 or 5 years likely. And that's really frustrating. So it needs outside thinking. It needs someone to come in and look at it and say, here's what you might want to think about doing. I think...
They're not going to do that.
Having our best players play in the Lowland League, and with the greatest respect to the Lowland League, see if you're 18 years old and you want to be...
An elite level player,
you need to be... the performances you would need to put in the Lowland League would be something that would make us all excited. There is not a player, and obviously Lewis gives great updates every Monday, and I think his opinion on it would be quite might be quite useful, to be honest, because he watches these players every week. But you need to be showing something in the Lowland League continually. You might go there, you might play for a bit and learn something, learn different elements of the game, but we don't have anyone at the moment that is playing that consistently, that is doing so well, that you then need to take elsewhere and say, go and do it there. That's the problem. And I think you can't keep a player for a year in the Lowland League if they're that good, because they will become very tired of it very, very quickly, because it's not the level that they should be playing at, especially at the age of 18. If it's 15, 16, 17, maybe even different, 18 years old playing the Lowland League, you will want to look elsewhere immediately. So it needs fresh thinking. And I think that's part of that wider discussion. And, you know, I always like listening to Dan O'Day. I think he's a really good speaker, whether it's on Celtic TV or otherwise. But how much influence Ange Postecoglou? I'd like to maybe find out actually what that influence is, because if it's anything more than playing style, I don't think I'd be too excited by it.
It's not even if you want to be an elite player, see, even if you are 18 and you just want to be a professional footballer, playing in the Lowland League, what's it, the fifth tier of Scottish football, I think. And as you say, like, you see like these like players that come through at Barcelona, like they were in the B team breaking all goal scoring records, and that was only like the second tier, wasn't it, of Spanish football. So we need someone who's going to take it by storm, so much so that after 2 or 3 months of playing that well, you get them straight in the team. But no one's really doing that, because I don't think the talent's there.
Yeah, I think if you look at the performance against Real Madrid, where we get scudded 6-0, it was
raining heavily, and obviously the Spaniards are much more used to playing in torrential rain.
They were like 16, 17 year olds up against, you know, 18-year-olds, like, there's, you know...
I reckon just about everybody had the ability to was watching that game and thought at 4-0, we're playing the actual Real Madrid tonight. This is getting a bit too close for comfort.
A bit too close to the bone. On the Ajax model that you mentioned, Ange was talking to... he's obviously in Australia. I don't know if he's still in Australia today, but... I forgot what day it was, sorry.
Jesus Christ.
Obviously back. But he was asked about kind of, you know, Celtic as a, you know, a club and stuff. And he was asked about, you know, how he performs. He said, you can't do one or two things. You can sort of say that's a gap that will never be bridged, because ultimately the rich clubs will continue to get bigger, as we've seen. Inevitably now, as the riches are greater in these competitions, they focus more on them, so they are the ones that are the beneficiaries of it. So the gap becomes bigger. Or you can take a view, as I have, that you chip away at it. Every year you go there and you make a little bit more of an impact. The more you're at that level, I think the more belief you gain as a club and and can grow to competing at consistent levels. And this is the key part. If you look at Ajax now, and people say Ajax have sold so many players in recent times, but they are consistently making the Champions League and made it into a semi-final. That was probably a 3 or 4 year period when they were building that team that didn't win the Dutch league. But they had the discipline to say, we're going to create these young players, we probably won't win the league, but over the course of time we'll be better. You look at a club like that and they're chipping away at it. That's where I see a club like Celtic. You go into these competitions, yes, for experience, but also to make an impact, and then it kind of goes on a little bit. Will you ever get to the same space? Probably not, but enough when you're more than competitive. But then what I did today was I went in and I looked at what Peter Lawwell said a couple of years ago about the Ajax model, and he was quoted as saying, "The ambition is maximising potential of this great club and going as far as we can in Europe. Celtic is not a sailing club. If you get a player like Kieran Tierney, the attraction of a team like Arsenal becomes too much. As much as we wanted him to stay, it's our job to get the most money we can. I don't believe Tierney was sold cheaply. Ajax hadn't won the league for 4 years before their bold new dawn. Would you take Rangers winning league for 4 years to maybe reach a Champions League semi-final?" Can't we do both? Fucking...
There's a lot of information there.
Take from that is we're going to sell our players in January. We're not going to win the league and we'll never bridge the gap.
My eyebrows did raise significantly at the, you know, you might not win the league part.
Yeah, and well, do you think
bloody better?
I think the one thing about
we bloody better
when people say about the Ajax model, it usually then just gets hijacked for whatever want. So it's like, I want to bring young players, good young players through. And it's like, I think pretty much every football fan wants to. There's a difference between talking about their youth ranks to their first team. The finances are vastly different as well, but they are a team that have had a clear vision for a long, long time, and they do have a very, very different dynamic. I think what Ange said at the start is true, that if we kept this squad of players and this manager together for 4 years, selling some, adding another couple, but the core was the same, and we did make the Champions League 4 consecutive years, we would be much better in year 4 than we would this year. Okay. You know, I think this year, if we had if we go in again next year and we get a very similar draw against similar profile of teams, I think you take the experience from it and you learn from it and you benefit from it. We have been away from it for so long that everything's new, everything's different. And I think we talked about it before that first game. You almost want to play in it so that you kind of know. All of those players now have had 2 games at Champions League level, one against the champions and one against another team. They can now start to get a feeling of what the general standard, like how much faster the game is, how much stronger the game is, how your legs feel after 70 minutes compared to a Scottish game. That's the things that players want to know, and they've had that now. You amplify that by that 2 games, by 6 games, and then you get the same again next year. You will build and improve. But it's keeping that team together, it's keeping the manager in place. That's something that we'll do. The big thing that Ange didn't mention there, and which is fair enough, I like listening to him speak, he is very philosophical. The one thing he doesn't mention, though, is that if he doesn't get that success, and I don't mean from the club side, because making the Champions League is seen as a success for a club. If he doesn't get that improvement year on year, or he doesn't see that, he's the one, the variable in there that might think, I might be best served looking elsewhere. And that's the thing then that sets the whole thing back. So that's the difficulty. So you need to engage the manager. You need to make sure that, and I think we did in the window largely, I think we did back him pretty well. You need to make sure that you keep engaging them, keep saying, what do you need? What do you want? And I'm not saying that's just money, but it's about different things. So that's what it needs to be. It's not just about keeping the players and keeping the structure. It's about keeping all these parts together so you can say, do you know what? Over the next 3-4 years, we are going to make the Champions League every year. And you actually do have a relatively good chance of doing that now. Unfortunately, one of the big things is make sure you win the league, which I know is difficult and it adds pressure, but that's the thing. If you can win the league over the next 3-4 years, the chances are you will make Champions League group stages for the next 3 or 4 years. And that is a whole lot of money, and that's a whole lot of opportunity for everyone there.
Barry?
Definitely. And how often in the past have we maybe backed the manager 1-2 windows and then we pull the rug out from under
his
feet?
That's every manager almost.
So it's encouraging that, what's that, 3 windows that Ange's had now, and we have backed him, but the proof will be in the pudding if we're sitting here this time next year and he's had another 2 windows and we've still continued to do it. So everything seems positive around the club just now, but we've always got that kind of doubt in our mind because of the experiences we've had with managers throughout the years.
Yeah, I think the whole thing about like models and stuff, and you said that yourself, Alan, you can't just pick a model from a club and be like, okay, we're going to be the Salzburg model or we're going to be the Ajax model. You have to create, as a club, internally, you have to create the model for your club. And I don't think the manager should be doing that.
No, I
think you get a manager that suits that model, but until the club decide on this is our... Because to me, with Celtic, and again, this is something we're probably going to touch in the Biscuit Tin, which was released on Sunday. With Celtic, it always seems there's a bit of a... Almost like the Scottish football thing, like a lack of vision. Like a lack of vision. Ah, if we win the league, then that's fine. We'll have a shot at the Champions League. If we get in, great. If we don't, well, we'll bat down the hatches.
I think on that as well. So see, Ajax, what their model's been going for the best part of 40 years, 30, 35 years. And the only club I can think of who have unlimited resources have tried to copy the Barcelona model is Man City. So they brought in all the backroom staff and the directors of football there. And even with what Pep's been there six years, they haven't been able to emulate that to that success. So they'll maybe get Foden, etc. So a club with unlimited resources still haven't got to that level of a model. What chance have we got? So as you say, you have to develop your own and not try and cherry pick from others.
I think just when you were mentioning there and you're talking about the board, and I think we are all have an opinion of the way Celtic are run. You know, it's maybe one for the biscuit tin, guys. What worries me a little bit is that you used that phrase, batten down the hatches. What worries me is that I reckon our board comfortably think that they could run this football club on a turnover of £50 to £60 million a year. And that worries me because we talk about merchandising and all the positive atmosphere. And, you know, we remember the banners and the Lisbon Lions stand when Rory Dyla was here. I think we, in our minds, think that that gives power and that that scares them.
Doesn't.
I think they've thought before, do you know what, we've been through that before. We could go through 2-3 lean years again until we come across a good manager again. That's what scares me a lot, that it's good when things are good, but they think, do you know what, if it came here, we could easily strip this club and run it on a much, much tighter budget than it is now. Because we do spend a lot of money now. I think they look at it and think, we'd be fine. If you strip £40 million out from our budget every year versus what it is this year, it'd be fine.
The other thing with that is I think there's a belief at the club that we'll always somehow find our way back to the top, whether that be just competing in the Champions League. And the way that the difference is going in regards to money and just that gap getting bigger and bigger, they could potentially do that after, let's say, Ange Postecoglou leaves in 2 years and batten down the hatches and bring someone in to run it for a while. You're not going to get back to that top, though, because that top's going to be completely different.
Aye, the longer you're out of it, the harder it is.
The further away you get.
Look how hard it is for us now after, 5 years without Champions League football. We've made a good impact, but you can see the way transfers have gone and the quality, and every point now is so critical, whereas maybe in Champions League groups in the past, if we lost a game, it wasn't the end of the world because we thought we could get it back. But now every single point you have to work like a dog for.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's kind of focus on the weekend. So I have a question for you. I put in the rundown, Jack Hendry shite dash discuss.
I didn't understand why that was in the rundown, to be honest.
Because he played for Scotland, played. And
I think he played well, didn't he?
Yeah, he played okay, but then there was that whole big thing. Every time, it's the John McGinn scenario. Whenever he has a good game for Scotland, people talk about Jack Hendry shouldn't have left. It was just a bit of fun, Alan, and I've realised.
Here's a question. What's your one Celtic memory?
One bad question and you've been usurped. It's a cutthroat business.
Fucking queue.
What's your one memory of Jack Hendry at Celtic? See, we all have the same one.
It was the Partick Thistle.
Yeah. Running around like a dog chasing his tail. Like, love it.
I wanted somebody to snap him, honestly. I really wanted him to give away a foul or something. I can actually see it in my head now that you mentioned it. It was awful.
Jack Hendry's not a dreadful footballer, but Jack Hendry is a guy who, when people seem to play well in a structure for Scotland, so that it's, you know, you take them out of that and you put them in playing for Celtic and they're out of their depth. Kenny McLean plays for Scotland.
It was a bit of a Rodgers vanity project, I think, Jack Hendry.
I think Jack Hendry may have been forced on him.
Do you think so? No, I think he maybe thought he can turn him into like the Scottish John Stones or whatever.
He was wrong.
Yes.
I'm glad he left when he did now. Question for you.
Jack Hendry or Brendan Rodgers? Don't be mean.
You pick.
Don't be disrespectful.
Don't be disrespectful. Don't you be disrespectful to me.
That's still a terrible
I know. Okay, question. Celtic versus Motherwell, 3 p.m. kickoff on Saturday. Here's a question. What's up yourself, Barry? We've got a massively important run. We're really busy between now and the 2 games a week, essentially. Massively important run from Saturday to the winter break / World Cup. What do you want to see more of or less of that you've seen from the start of the season? You can talk about an individual player. You can talk about the manager. What the team overall thoughts?
I think just that sort of up until the St Mirren game, I think the football was tremendous. That sort of relentless attacking football. Tannadice being the highlight as an obvious one aside to the Old Firm game. Oh, sorry, Glasgow Derby game. Oh, terrible.
I've got the power back now, Alan. Yes.
Got too cocky. What I want to see less of though is the amount of changes. Now I know it is a squad game and we have Ange said that he needs that rotation because of the style of football that we have, but I don't want to see so many at the one time.
So that's starting lineup more than, yeah.
Yeah, right. So, like, was it six changes against St Mirren? And we all know what happened. But I'm also looking forward to the introduction of Haskimanovic and Abildgaard, because we didn't see much of them. But what we did see of Haskimanovic, it was encouraging. I know the St Mirren game made a bit of bite, but I think it was Lorenzo said, I liked to see that. It showed that he cared. Like, yeah, he's only been at the club a month and he was desperate for that result not to happen. And Abildgaard, I think, I would hope that we could see him on Saturday. So just more of the same with the sort of free-flowing football. And I'm quite happy now that it's a packed schedule, because that 2 weeks felt like an eternity.
An absolute eternity.
Especially on the back of a defeat, because you're always stewing over that even longer. Mm-hmm. But so more sort of gung-ho football and less chopping and changing.
Alan, yourself?
I think just in the back of Barry's point, I think what I would like to see now is that, you know, we're into October now, or we're just about to be into October. If players don't take their chance when they're given it, and St Mirren obviously game is an outlier, but a lot of guys were given a big opportunity there, and I do include Haskimanovic in that as well. If these guys don't take their opportunity, then I think the only way that really that you can work a football team is that you need to, you don't get your chance again for until it crops up, whether it be injury or otherwise. And that does then feed into, we will rotate, we'll need to rotate, we've got a good squad, one bad performance doesn't ruin it. But I think when you see players coming in and they don't grasp that opportunity, and I think the two centre-halves are probably the ones that I'm probably aiming that at a little bit, and probably as well Aaron Moy.
Turnbull too.
When you come in, and yeah, for a player that had a really positive pre-season, I think if you don't come in then, you really then leave yourself at the risk of, if players are fit and available, then the only time you can then get is that time towards the end of a game maybe, when you are being used not to come in and show your talent, but you're coming in to make sure that someone else doesn't get injured. And that's that can be a very, very difficult place to get out of. So I think rotation is going to be here to stay, but how many you rotate and how many are included within that is then the question, because it's a pretty big pool at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, the four or five changes a game is pretty much standard. I mean,
that's 16 players?
Yeah, you've got a pool. You're using on a match day, you know, you're using 15, maybe 16 players. I think it then becomes, how important is that game time? And I've said for a long time that I think Ange Postecoglou is probably as close to Mark Lanier as I can imagine, and he really limits game time to players that he trusts and believe in. And I think there's players that are maybe not giving him that back. And I think you mentioned Abildgaard. He's the one for me that I think after that game against St Mirren that you would be saying,
right,
you are now fit and ready. I would expect to see him on Saturday, and I would expect to see him in at a very early stage, because you want to get him up and ready, because that squad needs another midfield player. It needs someone else with control, and it badly needs the two centre-halves to get back fit. Jens has done well, and he's done well in some games, but I do not want to see Jens and Welsh together again, because of that. That was a shambles, and I know it's been well covered, but that is the kind of thing that you look at and say, we don't go to that again. League Cup maybe, but we can't have that. That performance is not acceptable. They're two young defenders. They need, obviously,
guidance.
Cameron Carter-Vickers beside them, and they've both performed well. You know, Stephen Welsh has done really well. He's been a really, really useful player for Ange, and Jens is, he's been encouraging since he came in, but he's made a lot of mistakes, but largely he's got away with them. I think last weekend, or the weekend before, sorry, is one where it kind of pointed out that, just a wee reality check, that we're not quite good enough yet to lose that many first team players and coast. And you know, it's a hard lesson to learn, but it is one, you know, you have to take in the chin.
Yeah, I think as well, we spoke on the St Mirren reaction about, personally, I felt that there's now some players that you can't trust entirely. And I think that Ange would probably think that as well, going on what you're saying, Alan. And if we are, as we mentioned earlier, if we are that active, looking to improve in the transfer window, it won't be long before the January transfer window comes up. And if, on the basis of that last game and some other performances, if Ange can't trust guys, the likes of Abildgaard will move beyond them, and he'll want to kind of have sort of free front load that as well behind them. So they aren't taking their chances. David Turnbull's the one for me, if I think to even the games which has been coming on. I think there's a good player in there, but and someone who did well for us last season up until Christmas, but I think time again now he's not taking his chance. And midfielders, obviously, say are so important in this system that he could find himself kind of surplus to requirements.
Sorry to jump in, but do you think it's, you know, for someone like Turnbull, who, you know, we've highlighted, and it's clear that, you know, his football age and his actual age are very different. You know, he might only be like 21 or 22, but, you know, he's not had a lot of first-team experience. He had a really hard, bad injury. Is it fair to say that it's maybe tougher for him to not get up to speed on a football pitch in regards to you might get the best out of him in his third or fourth game? As opposed to, and I know that's the cutthroat nature of this squad, Alan.
Yeah, it is. And I think what Barry says about trust is the exact point. And, you know, using Turnbull's example, I think it's correct. Ange Postecoglou publicly, even privately, I don't think, after St Mirren, I don't think he would have spoke to the players and said, individually, you need to do this. He doesn't seem that type of manager. I think he'll let it go. He'll have some feedback in the game and how they want to control it. But I don't think he's wanting to dwell on it. When he's watching that back, though, and he's watching that back sitting having one of those glasses of whiskey that, you know, he's trying to get through, he will look at that and he'll look at some players and he'll think, I won't make that mistake again. I don't think it's something he would come out and say, because he's not a kind of throw the players under the bus type manager, especially a performance like that where there's so much to go round. But there are players you look at there and you go, and you'd probably just think, next time I'm thinking about changing it up, I'm only going to use him if it's one change. And I think the criticism that Ange has to take from that last game is that was a lot of changes. And yeah, I know you guys talked about it and it was points well made. But I think you still look at some players and you think, I've learned something that I'm going to remember. And I think if you want to get to that elite level and keep that level of performance that we have had throughout the start of the season, you know, we've been really, really good and fucking exciting to watch. If you want to keep that going, I know that there are some players that might not be part of that. And that's what it's about as you go on. It's about chiselling down and trying to cut away the players that you maybe think aren't quite there. And some of those players have a value. Turnbull has a value. It's about, has he got a value here to contribute to that top level of performance that we want to get to? And that, I'd say, it's probably very much up for grabs.
And I think the point on Turnbull as well, and not to shit on him, because I do like him, but he's got a bigger sort of case study of, he's had more minutes than the majority of the people that played that had an off game against St Mirren. So he's one that when he watches that back, he'd say, well, that's not the first time this season that's happened. Whereas for some of the others, you could argue it was the first time this season they've had a bad day.
Injury-wise, Giakoumakis, Gus Poyet, who I didn't realise was the manager of Greece, said that his injury's not too bad and it's not going to be long-term, but it's very unlikely he'll be able to play this weekend.
It's none of his fucking business.
You're fucking right.
Our medics will tell him that he's hanging off, thank you.
CCV, there are reports saying that this is going to be out longer than first feared. Jesus. Nothing confirmed, but David Turnbull, he pulled out the Scotland squad, but again, nothing too serious. Abada, they're talking about tiredness and fatigue. Again, nothing overly serious. Maeda as well, he came off, but he was pictured training today, so that's a massive positive.
She just done him as well. He's similar to Turnbull, I think. I think he's had a number of performances where he hasn't grabbed his opportunity, and the fact now that we have strengthened with Haksabanovic, that's maybe one to kind of keep an eye on.
Haksabanovic came off early, but again, nothing, no confirmation on how bad. Starfelt's already injured. We've got the massive game against Leipzig coming up. You're going to be in Germany for that, Alan. That'll be good. But, you know, you'd hate to go into that game with Jens and Welsh just because. But, you know, put from a positive standpoint. Well, let's look at this weekend. So, a couple of injury worries, you know, CCV and Starfelt are the two ones where you look at and you think, having our two first-choice centre-backs unavailable. Because, you know, at the start of the season, you know, we want another centre-back. We want four first-team ready centre-backs. And a lot of people were saying, well, come on, how often do your centre-backs get injured? 2 months later.
I don't know why people don't think about centre-half, though, as a position that it's four. It needs to be four good first-team. And I think you probably largely could, and I think we all say we're happy with the four there. You don't have anything behind that, though.
At all.
And that is, that is something to maybe look at.
Boston Law would be the next one because Dane Murray's injured.
Yeah.
Boston Law doesn't look ready to step into first team duty definitely at this point. So that, yeah. Sorry, Alan, I cut you off there.
No, so it's just one that there is, I think Scott Fleming's wrote something that's out on the website tomorrow morning. It's free. Everybody can read it as well. And it is just, it is unfortunate we're missing two of our first choice centre-halves, but there is a gap there. And it is even one that you look at and think, who would be the player that you would move in there? And you start to think, would it be Ralston? Aboudgard? It's not, that's not really a good position to be in. And look, I hope, CCV, hopefully it's fine. He seems the type that would be able to shake off injuries. Carlos Stafford's obviously been out for a wee while. It's different, but that is one that having four and only four really is a bit of a risk, because I do think Bosnlaw was quite a bit off it.
I think he is as
so
well.
So it is just one to look out for, but I think if they're back, it's a different story, but it's riding pretty close just with the two of them, and it is unfortunate, but you know, a squad planning point of view, a wee bit of an oversight maybe. But it's worth reading the article. It does kind of set it out quite well, and yeah.
Type in thecynic.co and the article will be there. Just click on it. Well, if you check on Twitter at 90 Minute Cynic, the links will be there as well. So Scott's a fantastic writer, so that'll be great. Motherwell themselves are in 8th position. They've played 7 this season. They've won 3, lost 2, they've drawn 1. Which actually I thought would have put them further up the table, but no, they're in 8th. Obviously they sacked their manager after that embarrassing loss in Europe, to lost both legs against Sligo Rovers the last couple of games. So Stevie Hamill became the manager. He took over from Graeme Alexander. And the last 4 games have been, in the, sorry, last 3 games in the league, it's been 2 defeats and a draw. Celtic Park at home, 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday. Barry, how are you feeling about this game?
Fairly confident. Well, I was a lot more confident until you read out the injury list. But no, it's a game I'm looking forward to. I think because we've maybe had that wake-up call that you mentioned, Gal, not just the manager, but some of the players as well, they'll have been waiting the last 2 weeks to try and put that right. I'd imagine we'll come flying out the traps, I hope. I actually watched the Motherwell game a couple of weeks ago. Don't know why, but it was on. And they played really well, they just couldn't score. Loads of chances. So I think they've had a real bounce out of Stevie Hamill.
I like Stevie Hamill.
I'm not keen on him.
But, should I not like him?
Am I the referee here then?
Should I not like him, Barry?
Well, we'll talk off here.
That means you shouldn't like him.
Tell me what to do, Barry. I don't know. Yeah.
No, it's famous last words, but the Saturday 3 o'clock, after a bad result and an international break, the players will want to put it right, and the crowd will just be delighted to have Celtic back. So I don't have any worries, and I'm hoping for a lot of goals.
What about yourself, Alan? How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think all that we kind of mentioned about and saying about Ange kind of letting the game wash off, it's frustrating for us as fans, and it will be as players getting into an international break after losing. But it is a long time ago. We have been really good. I would expect us to kind of pick up from, you know, where we left off domestically prior to that. So, and it is a good opportunity. We've got a really, really big game on the Wednesday as well. So I think the atmosphere will be really good. I'm really excited. Looking forward to going. And I think the one thing, obviously, Ange will have his press conference tomorrow. I don't expect him to give too detailed an update on injuries, because he tends to play it a little bit...
close to the chest, yeah.
Yeah, he plays it a little bit coy with that. But it'll be interesting to see all of the players who are fit and available to play, who it is that gets the nod, and again, who the substitutions are, mm-hmm. because that might give you an idea of what his thinking is post St Mirren. So I think that'll be interesting. So... the wingers will be interesting in that central midfield. Obviously, defence will be largely based on if Starfelt and, you know, Carter Vickers are either of them were fit or available, or even they would be in the squad. But I think the rest of it will be quite interesting to see who's in and who's out after St Mirren.
Yeah, we'll come to our lineup in a second. But just Motherwell, they've got a lot of players that you know that have been in and around the league for a while. One of the McGinns plays for them. Goss, I don't even know what.
Sanders and McGinn.
The McPoyles out about Sunday. <sunny.
laughs> Yes. Yeah, you can't throw a stone without hitting them again. Kelly's and goals, McGinn. Goss, who used to play for Rangers. Blair Spittle. And that young Ross Tierney. Did you see his volley for absolutely Peach. Fantastic technique. And they've got that Van Veen up front, who, as you said, Barry, you know, you watched the game. Because the last game at home, they get they get beat quite convincingly by Hearts. And that Van Veen's one of those guys who I think he's a kind of good penalty box striker, but like he does a lot outside of there. So how often are they going to be near our box, hopefully?
He's a kind of throwback to the... Remember, there was a lot of sort of obscure foreign players.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Dirk Lehman. Remember Dirk Lehman?
Yeah.
He reminds me of him. But I actually think he's a good player. He had a good sort of pedigree at the lower leagues in England before he came to Scotland. And every time I've seen him, he looked good. But as you say, he needs to be in and around the box and maybe he'll get that against us. I'm not so sure.
Takes a good set piece as well.
He scored a free kick, didn't he, this season? Yeah.
On the Lunch Club tomorrow, we'll be going into detail. We'll have Christian will have a tactical breakdown, and we'll also be speaking to a Motherwell contributor who will give us a kind of more detailed thought into their side of it. The last couple of times we've played Motherwell last season, we played them obviously four times. We beat them four times. 2-0 on the 16th of October. Jota and David Turnbull. At Fir Park.
Remember that well.
1-0. Are you saying that as a joke? Or?
No. Okay. Jane, you'll remember it well.
Just the way you said, you know that.
I'll let you know if I remember the other three.
We beat them 1-0 with Rogic scoring.
Celtic played Park. Up front, didn't he? Or Turnbull kind of played up front.
Exactly. Then we beat them 4-0 at Fir Park again. Abada, Rogic, and Maeda get two.
Arguably the performance of the season.
Yep.
Absolutely. And, well, you say that, and then we beat them 6-0 in the last game of the season.
Also, arguably the performance of the season.
Motherwell, I think. You very much know what you're going to get with Motherwell, how they're going to play. They've got a very, they've got a manager who knows the league, played in the league. You get players who have a lot of experience. In terms of Celtic, Barry, what are you looking for? What would your team build look like?
It's hard to know, but you would have Hart, Juranovic, the centre half. So it's a kind of wait and see. I've kind of got the feeling though that it might have to be Jens and Welsh again if there's no other options. Taylor at left back. Then I would like to see Abildgaard come in the six.
Start.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult one then because obviously it's Callum McGregor and one other. And I know we spoke highly of O'Reilly, but I think Hatate's been even better than him this season. So I would tend to go with Hatate. And then my front three would be Kyogo, Jota, and if Haksabanovic is fit, I would start him.
Alan,
start at Celtic Park.
I would go the same with the exception of Abildgaard, and I think I would go McGregor, Hatate and O'Reilly. But given McGregor, I think, played every minute for Scotland, is that right?
Yeah.
He would be, if you are in the position, and I know it's tricky with your captain, you don't want to take your captain off at half time or anything like that because it looks a little bit...
It does, it's stupid.
It's just different. If you're winning 2-0, you take your captain off and you don't win the game, or you kind of squeeze it out, it creates this kind of idea. There's a mental side to it that's just it's different from any other player. But I would be very, very keen to make sure Callum McGregor is not, you know, overexerted before we go to Leipzig on Wednesday, because that's a huge game. Our kind of Champions League destiny will be decided in this doubleheader with Leipzig, whether we qualify or not. Obviously, third and fourth is a little bit different, but if you want to qualify, you need to do something the next 10 days. And Callum McGregor is so important to that. He sometimes can show that tiredness, and the higher up the levels, the much more that's exposed. He is huge for Wednesday night. So I don't disagree with the opinion of not starting him, but I just think Ange will do it. But I would like to see Abildgaard, and I'd like to see him at an early stage. It would be, Moy would be the one that kind of drops out potentially that rotation for me. Haksabanovic is the other one that I think you could debate, because I thought he was really, really poor against St Mirren. But he's shown enough. He has had limited game time. And I think Dyson Maeda, you know, that knock, potentially Abada, fatigue, tiredness. I think Haksabanovic and Jota probably are the two that get the nod. And obviously alongside Kyogo.
See, on that point, and I'll come to both of you for this one. If we are going with Jens and Welsh in Germany, would you rather have McGregor at the six, who they know and have obviously played, or would you have Abildgaard there? Because Abildgaard's reputation and, you know, how Ange spoke about him and kind of how he was brought in, he seems to have been brought in because he's a calibre of player that will kind of flourish for us in the Champions League. And we're running out of Champions League games. And it's kind of like, you know, when do you pull the trigger on that? And I know it's not difficult, but is it a case of, you know, better the devil you know in regards to McGregor? He might not be as, you know, as accomplished as Abildgaard in the six, or do you stick with what you know? What's your thoughts on that? Just with the Welsh and Jones kind of scenario.
I think based on, I don't think McGregor had the best of games. I know that was with CCB was in the Shakhtar game, but I think based on his performance over there, I think you want to get him as much help in there. So Abelgaard would give you that sort of, I know we haven't seen him play, but on paper he would give you that sort of safety net. And even if it means for large periods of the game they're both deep lying, I think that would give you even more protection than Callum McGregor and two number eights. So I would go Abelgaard, throw him in there and have McGregor as an eight, but he can also drop back to...
And that's why you would play him on Saturday?
Yes, so that he's ready, so that we're not throwing him in Germany.
What's your thoughts on that, Alan?
I think I've just shown a tendency that if a player, if he thinks there's an improvement to be made in the team, I don't think he worries too much about cohesion and how much the players know each other. I think he puts trust in players to be able to communicate in the park.
Yeah.
And I think if Abelgaard doesn't get 30 minutes on Saturday, I don't think he gets that start. I think if you see him start on Saturday or that he does get that game time, I think, and he obviously succeeds, we're working on the basis that he's going to come in and he's going to be really good. He is the player that you need to then look at, because the accusation against us in the Champions League is that the protection isn't necessarily there off the ball for the centre-halves.
Yeah.
And I think it's spot on. I do. I think you've seen it in games. When we turn the ball over, we don't have the ability to get close to players and use our strength or make a tackle. Callum McGregor's reading of the game with the ball is flawless. Without the ball, it's not a strong point. You don't see him nipping in, grabbing the ball and driving forward with it. If you can bring that type of player in while still having Callum McGregor, who's probably your best player in the team, Hatate, McGregor is eights with Abelgaard, I think I don't want to say it's a game changer in the Champions League, but it is one of the things that I think most teams look at when you're looking at, if you were an opposition scout looking at Celtic, that's the one thing you would say, that protection in front of the centre-halves when we turn the ball over is not there to the level that other teams have it, and you look at that. If you can bring someone in that can change that, it maybe can help a little bit. He needs to be good in the ball. He needs to communicate with the players. Callum McGregor does do an extraordinary amount of talking in that number six position, more than any other year that I've ever seen him. He does an extraordinary amount of communicating with the players behind him, the players in front of him. He does not stop the whole game. So you will lose a little bit of that. But if you can improve the quality overall of your midfield as a kind of aggregate, I think he'll definitely do it. He's done it before. He's done it right from day one. If a player he thinks can improve it, he'll put them in.
Yeah.
He mentioned, I think it was on the podcast he did with that Daryl Curry, and he was talking about last season when he threw Starfelt in and he threw Kyogo in for his debut, and he said part of the reason he does that is to accelerate their progress. Now, it might affect that one game because they might be rusty or they haven't even had a chance to train. So I'm maybe a wee bit surprised that he hasn't done that with Abelgaard so far. I know it's been limited chances, but if we want to see him in this Champions League, and we kind of get the feeling that's what he was bought for, I think he has to feature at least half an hour, as you say. Yeah. But I would want to see him start, and if he plays well on Saturday, then he guarantees his place for Wednesday.
Absolutely.
Just repeat again, getting McGregor some sort of rest, I think, at the weekend is really would be, and it's not to disrespect Motherwell, but if you can get him 30, 40 minutes rest on Saturday, it really would help, because that's going to be a massive game and it's going to be a really intense game on Wednesday night. You don't want him getting in the last 20 minutes. Arguably your best player kind of starting to struggle, which, yeah, given the amount of football he's played,
would only be natural.
Could be the case. And I know he talks about it really well and he says he would struggle if he played any less than 60 games, but, you know, take a break, son.
Yeah, take a break. So next week on the weekly, we'll be, reviewing the Leipzig game. But we'll have podcasts every single day. We've got the agenda on Monday looking ahead to the Leipzig game. We've got the review, which kind of looks over everything that's happened over the week and the weekend, especially the Motherwell game. And then we'll have the preview, which we'll be looking at a podcast directed specifically for the Leipzig game, and then we'll have the reaction afterwards. So every day, podcast daily, news, features, and everything in between. Celtic FC Women start their League Cup campaign against Partick Thistle on Sunday at 12:45 PM at Petershill Park. The Celtic Women's Football Show is released every Wednesday. There has been a break recently due to internationals and such, but they'll be back soon. Claire and Lorenzo, manager and player interviews, as well as much, much more. Okay. So, see you finish off.
Well, just thinking Sunday, start of October up in Peter's Hill Park. That's like playing in the top of a mountain up there, man.
It is, yes.
Brutal. Good luck.
Me and Claire will be there, and Lorenzo, I believe, will be there. Checking that out, so get involved.
Yeah.
I've got a wee end of quiz thing for you.
Ooh.
But it's not a quiz.
Thank fuck, I'm playing Barry, so I've got a chance.
So, it's the lineup thing where basically you both have a chance to name someone from the lineup.
Oh, I like this.
Barry will win.
Okay, you've got two lives, so you can get one wrong, but obviously you can't get both wrong.
I should get like a... Barry should start on them. I really think you should start on a handicap going forward with these. We'll discuss it going forward, but...
I'll get the first two wrong.
Minus two here, I think.
Well, Barry, Barry, Alan... You don't know the time frame yet.
It probably doesn't have a heart, to be honest.
Celtic 3, Motherwell 1, from the 1st of December 2002.
I thought we were going to see that game that I remembered from last year. I can't believe my lucky stars.
So, Celtic 1, 3-1. Celtic Motherwell. So, it's the 2002-2003 season. I'm just going to go back and forth, and I want you to name a player. You can also name Motherwell players. I'll give you that let, if you will.
What was the score?
3-1.
Who scored?
I thought to myself today when I was doing this, like, if they ask us who scored, don't say, but...
The doctor pointed for his cheek.
Well, maybe. Okay, so I'm going to go one each. I'm going to start because you're back from holiday and it's always tough coming back to work after your first time off. You can go first, Alan. So if you get one wrong, you can get one wrong, but that two lives, essentially. Alan, go.
Neil Lennon. Fuck's sake.
Neil Lennon.
You get injured in Vigo.
Neil.
See these fucking details that I can...
Oh, Jesus Christ. Right, do you know what?
Shambles.
Do you allow Alan to have another guess without a life taking
one? Yeah, and if I lose, then...
Patronising. Great. Okay. Everybody can hear me being patronised.
Okay.
Yes, son.
Yes, tap on the head.
Johan Mialbi.
isn't there either.
Right, you've got one life back though.
Yeah, okay.
Fucking hate Martin. My worst era being a Celtic fan.
Paul Lambert.
Correct, Barry.
Of course.
Henrik Larsson. Correct, Alan.
Bobo Baldi.
Correct, Barry.
Alan Thompson.
Correct, Alan.
Didi Ragat.
Correct, Barry.
Chris Sutton
was on the bench, so correct.
Correct.
John Hartson.
Correct, Barry.
Forget what I've said.
Rob Douglas.
Correct, Alan.
So if... Ulrich Larsson.
Oh, he's down. He's down.
Oh.
Hands down, man down.
No, he is down.
Jackie McNamara.
Correct, oh, Alan. If you get one wrong...
See, we said Petrov yet?
We haven't said Petrov, no.
And was he playing?
No, he wasn't.
Oh,
no,
that was my next guess as well.
No, but you have to get one right, or it's a draw.
No pressure.
Bench included as well. Magnus Hedman.
Incorrect. So, you both... in fact, you know what? See, because you've got the extra life and it isn't close, I'll give you one more chance. If you get one more player, then you win, and that's fair.
Oh, Jesus.
It's a mental team.
Is Guppy still there at that time?
Is that your guess?
That's a probably no. What's your reaction? Hi, go for Guppy.
Correct, Alan. The other two players that were playing on the pitch, by the way, it's tough. You both did really well.
Silla.
He's on the bench, so that would have been a correct one. Do you want to name any other players?
I'm thinking a goalkeeper, so that was before Brotto came in, I'd imagine.
You're not going to get it.
Who was the Irish keeper?
Michael McGovern.
Jonathan Gould.
Still?
Yeah. You're still there?
That really, really shocked me. Jonathan Gould. So...
Christ, when I hear Jonathan Gould, I immediately just think of like the 97 cup final.
I know.
Sheen kind of goalie top.
Val Haren?
I assumed he would have been injured. His name came to mind, but when you get to that stage with him, you start to think...
Jamie Smith?
Nope. There's three players
David
left.
Fernandez?
David Fernandez started.
Holy shit.
That was his reaction when he started to
start. Are you sure?
Any other players? It's two more players to get.
Stephen Craney,
that's it, yeah.
I cannot say this when we're playing it.
Left back, and there's one more player to get. Forward.
Maloney?
Sean Maloney. Well done. Yeah. That was good.
Rip roaring good fun.
Larson scored, Valharan scored, and Scott Leach scored an own goal. There you go.
He's an angry looking fella, Scott Leach, wasn't he? I hope he's not the Motherwell contributor tomorrow, because he'll probably batter you.
I assume he's one of them. Listen, this has been absolutely fantastic, as always. Alan, you'll be in Germany next week.
Yes.
So, yeah, so...
It's never here.
Missing again.
Bloody hell. But Samani will be back, and Barry, we'll see you soon as well. Plenty of content coming up on thecynic.co.
Podcasts every day. It's like a T-shirt cannon. It's fucking podcasts.
And also Scott...
Podcast in the sky.
Scott Fleming has an article as well on the website, but we'll be promoting that. So check us out on Twitter at 90MinuteCynic, and just check out the website, thecynic.co, because there's lots and lots of free content if you want to just have a snoop, get involved. Barry Gallagher, pleasure as always, sir.
Thank you, and RIP Coolio.
RIP Coolio. Alan Edgar, pleasure.
Pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
Lovely stuff. From Alan Edgar, from Barry Gallagher, from myself, Chris Gallagher, this has been The Cynic Weekly, and we'll speak to you down the road.